All right. Good evening. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting of October 4th. We will start our meeting off with the introductions. To my right on the dais, left.
That's your left.
Left.
It's your other right. Hi, Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
Good evening. I'm Richard Shattuck, Central Kitsap.
Carrie Kaltenborn Corey, South Kitsap.
And then whoever on the screen.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Okay.
JC Smith representing South Kitsap.
All right. And I'm Joe Phillips from North Kitsap. Okay, we had one excuse. Jonathan is attending a ceremony for his son, and haven't heard from Mr. Bo. He may be joining us a little later. Okay, going over the protocol for our meetings, we do ask that people only speak when it's their turn. Make sure your microphones, cell phones, and other electronic devices are turned off before the meeting. And please avoid actively speaking in the chamber and interrupting other people speaking. Let's see. We do have three methods on public testimony. For internet users, you can use the raise hand feature in the Zoom box at the bottom to signal you want to speak. When it is your turn, your name will be announced and you'll be unmuted. For call-in users, you can use dial 9 on your keypad to signal you'd like to comment. When the last four digits of your call-in number are announced, the sound will be unmuted, and then you should announce your name. And that call-in, also just a reminder, you may have to use *6 to unmute your phone. And then we do accept written comments. Those will be read during the public comment period if submitted to presenting staff members or via email by 2 p.m. on the day prior to the meeting. Same limitations of 2 minutes for those to be read. We ask that you include the date of the meeting the comments are intended for, your name, and what item you wish to address. In general, on comments, we do limit comment period to 2 minutes, and for public hearings, it's 3, but that number is a flexible number in basis. With that, we have adoption of the agenda. Do I hear a motion to adopt the agenda?
Motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
All right. And second?
I'll second.
All right. Those in favor of the agenda, raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Everybody's agreed. All right. We're on the agenda. Next item is the adoption of the minutes. We have 2 sets. Do I hear a motion for the July 19th minutes?
I'll move to adopt the minutes.
All right. And second, Alan, thank you. And with that, any comments on the July 19th minutes, corrections? No? Okay. All those in favor of the adopting the minutes as written, please raise your hand. Okay. It's a unanimous. It's adopted. Thank you. And then the minutes for August 16th. Do I have a motion for adopting August 16th.
I move to adopt the August 16th minutes as presented.
I'll second it.
Second. All right. Any corrections on the August 16th? Yes. And then I had one correction on page 4 at line 1. It's reading as that would be, or should that have been a one more targeted? Yeah. Just a short.
Just really delete the or, is that what you're asking?
Let's see, on line 1, halfway through the sentence, as that would be, or four more. Okay, so if that could be corrected, then, and that was all I found. Okay, all those in favor of adopting the August 16th minutes as corrected, please raise your hands. Okay, it's unanimous. Thank you. All right, moving on to our general public comment period. Do we have anybody for commenting? Mr. Palmer.
Yes, thank you for letting me speak. I have two issues. One has to do with the EV bicycle code. I think the CEPA checklist thing is grossly inadequate when it talks about power demand. You can't leave that up to the state. It's a local responsibility as well. And I think there's enough evidence to say we don't have the grid to allow the kind of, or to require the kind of demands that having a charging station in homes or apartments plus commercial establishments is going to require. I will submit comments in writing with regard to that. My next comment has to do with the comprehensive plan, the 2024 comprehensive plan update that's supposedly underway. And I'm wondering why we can't have a citizens committee, not unlike the one that was used for the development of the Shoreline Master Program back in 2012-2014. Help to guide that process. Just having open house meetings and submitting comments that are usually dismissed rather easily by staff seems counterproductive to something that affects a whole lot of people in Kitsap County. So I'm advocating that we create a citizen committee, and I would suggest that the Planning Commission members, or at least some of them, should be on that citizens committee. And I guess those are my summary comments for now, but in general, back to the EV code, I think it's a total waste of time. If we're going to have such a code, it should be for those that really want to do that, because I believe in entrepreneurship and not government mandates. So enough said for now.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Do we have any other comments? Not seeing anyone. Okay, I will close the comment period for this agenda item, and we are moving on to the bike electrical code update. Melissa Shoemake.
Thanks, Chair Phillips. Melissa Shoemake, senior planner for DCD Long Range. I've got a presentation. Give me just a second to get that shared. Okay, so some of this is going to probably be a refresher for most of you, but then there's going to be a lot more detail. So as we've talked about before, the goals for the project are to encourage healthy and resilient communities by increasing non-motorized and low or no emission transportation options, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and thereby supporting Puget Sound Regional Council's Vision 2050, our own Kitsap countywide planning policies, and the Kitsap County Climate Change Resiliency Assessment goals and outcomes, improving public health outcomes with both cleaner air and active transportation, and implementing the goals and policies of our current 2016 comprehensive plan, as well as our in-process 2024 comprehensive plan update. In a little bit more detail, because it's been a topic of conversation, electric vehicles currently, and this is data from literally today from the state website, there are currently 3,800 electric vehicles that are registered in Kitsap County. We have a large number of people in Kitsap County who responded to our community survey who indicated, and this is also the indication from various nationwide surveys, the biggest barrier to adopting electric vehicles is charging concerns. And electric vehicles are much more efficient than internal combustion vehicles, even when the electric grid is powered by something like entirely coal rather than our energy mix here, which is, you know, wind, hydroelectric, some fossil fuels. So the graphics there are from a linked in the staff report, a website from Yale, and they just indicate basically how much energy is used or lost by different kinds of vehicles. So the first graphic is in a gasoline powered vehicle, about 80% of the energy that you put in the tank is actually lost. A lot of that's lost in purely just running the engine, but there's also some parasitic loss, loss that happens with the drivetrain, and then electricity for, you know, your heater, your stereo, all that good stuff. For an electric vehicle, there's a total of about 11% of the energy is lost. So you charge, you do lose some from the drivetrain and also from cooling and steering, so things that are, you know, electric powered. But you also do actually gain energy from regenerative braking. And so you've got about an 87 to 91% of the energy that goes into an electric vehicle actually goes to the tires and powers the car moving forward. And the final graphic shows that if it takes 8.9 million barrels of oil a day to power the US's fleet of internal combustion vehicles, there's approximately 1.8 million barrels that are actually moving all of those vehicles forward. So if we're saying the energy equivalent in gasoline of 1.8 million barrels of oil, it's actually only about 6.1 million barrels of gasoline that would be equivalent. So the power plant loses about 67%. And then there's that electric vehicle inefficiency of about 11%. So it's about a 31% difference there. And there's further details on that website when you go through it, through the staff report as well. So the scope as originally set forth is to provide guidance for bicycle parking and electric vehicle charging facilities for new construction and redevelopment where the project cost is greater than or equal to 50% of the assessed building value. So it doesn't include the land value of assessments. For bicycle parking, that's in our UGAs, our rural commercial and rural industrial zones, and in our limited areas of more intense rural development. For electric vehicles, it applies everywhere. The code establishes minimum standards and encourages provision of additional facilities with incentives, and then establishes additional kinds of standards. There's also some revisions to definitions in our definition chapter, and also adding some cross-references for our building code section. The reason for that is that the state building code has requirements for electric vehicle charging that's going to take place July 1st. This WAC is already adopted. You can look at it online. The way it's currently shown is the current WAC 5150-0429 that's effective through the end of June of next year. And then the adopted WAC that will go into effect July 1st next year. They're both on the website. These requirements from the state for the building code go much further than the previous rules that they had for electric vehicle requirements. They're also more broadly applicable. The initial scope was for the electric vehicle charging to apply in the same areas of the county as what the bicycle parking standards are. But as it's the state building code, it applies everywhere. And we can't require less than what the state mandates. So this table is basically directly out of that code. And it's saying EV charging stations. So these are, you can pull up and charge your vehicle. So those are 10% of the total parking spaces that are required on the site. So if you have 100 vehicle parking spaces that are required for a project, 10 of them need to be electric vehicle charging stations. They also require that there be EV-ready parking spaces, the same percentage, 10%. EV-ready is everything except the charger is installed. And then EV-capable is, again, an additional 10%. EV-capable is you haven't actually installed the electricity to the parking space, but you have made it easier for you to do so in the future so that you don't have to rip up the parking lot. Functionally, it's providing raceways, making sure that there's enough room in the electrical box, that sort of thing. There are exceptions for buildings that do not contain more than two dwelling units. So it doesn't apply to single family homes or duplexes, or to dwelling units that have private garages. So if, for example, it's an apartment building that all have, you know, private garages, that's not required as well. There are a few exceptions for occupancy codes in here. The way that it's adopted currently in the ordinance is that there aren't exceptions for occupancy groups. Functionally, the occupancies that they didn't include here are ones that we don't actually have vehicle parking standards for anyways. So just to kind of highlight what we've done for the project, back in January, we had kickoff meetings with the various CACs, our tribal coordination group that we meet with regularly, as well as yourselves. In February, there was the community survey that I mentioned that got sent out via email. That was both gov delivery, folks who signed up to get code update emails from the department, as well as a targeted email list that our department keeps of folks who should see the updates that we're putting out. And for this project, that email list actually was broadened to include various cycling and electric vehicle groups as well. And then it was also put out on the county's social media. The workshop group met in June of 2022 to review the initial staff draft that had been put together. And so they proposed revisions. So after the workshop group, that was functionally version 2 of the code. And in July and August, we had some briefings and consultations, including KBA and the Department Advisory Group, as well as some more of the CACs. Those meetings included lots of feedback that made it into the ordinance that is up on the website for consideration and public comment currently. So the draft ordinance that's available right now is essentially version 3. So 1st of September, that draft ordinance and the staff report and the SEPA checklist were made available, and the SEPA official got the determination of non-significance out as well earlier this month. Also held additional CAC meetings. There was a virtual open house at the beginning of the month. I opened the public comment period September 15th, and those were all announced with another email blast going out at the beginning of September as well. Which gets us to what's in the ordinance. So it's a really, really long ordinance for what is functionally not actually that much content, which is why I've laid it out this way, rather than trying to scroll through the ordinance with you all. We can certainly do that as you have questions, but I figured this way was easier. So section one is basically, why are we adopting an ordinance? Section two is, how did we get here? So it's the timeline of all of the events that took place, the work plan meetings with the board and your folks, all of the other public meetings that have happened, all that good stuff. Section three lines out all of the comp plan goals and policies that are applicable to the project. And then we get into kind of the meat of what we're actually doing. So section four adds to chapter 1404, which is the technical building codes chapter, the new state building code requirement from that WAC for electric vehicle charging infrastructure. We would have had to adopt that by July 1st anyways. We're just moving up the time frame so that the other portions of the zoning code that go along with it are tied together. Sections five and six are a pair of new definitions that are added to our definition chapter in the zoning title. And those are for electric vehicle charging space and electric vehicle infrastructure. Section seven strikes the existing bicycle parking requirements that were like two sentences in our general parking standards in 17490. Section eight adds that the maximum amount of reduction that you can have if you use the incentives for bicycle parking or electric vehicle charging is 25%. So then we get into, okay, what are the actual new standards? So section nine is the bicycle parking standards. And it's a new section in our code as well in the parking code. So like I said, and this is lined out in the ordinance, it applies in the urban growth areas, rural commercial and rural industrial zones, and in LAMRs for new construction where 10 or more vehicle parking spaces are required. So you don't have to put a bicycle parking space in if your project only is required to have 5 vehicle parking spaces. Or redevelopment where the project cost is greater than or equal to 50% of the assessed building value. And then it lines out for UGAs and LAMRDs, it's 1 bicycle parking space for every 10 vehicle parking spaces, and it's 1 for every 20 in the rural commercial and rural industrial zones. As a note on that, the bicycle parking standards that were struck had said it should be 1 for every 10, but it shall be 1 for 20. So that's something to kind of keep in mind when you look at those numbers. We don't want the bicycle parking to be located any further than 100 feet away from the main entrance to the building, and it should be adjacent to a walkway. And it should be constructed on a dustless, durable surface. So it can be concrete, it can be something like permeable pavers. We don't want it to be grass or gravel. And it needs to be illuminated. The RAC has several requirements, including it needs to contact the bicycle frame at 2 points. The diameter of the RAC should not be any greater than 3 inches. It needs to be constructed of something that's durable and rust-free. So, you know, not something made of cast iron unless it's been, you know, enamel coated. Not something made of wood, that sort of thing. And it needs to be anchored to the ground. All of those pretty much boil down to, is it gonna hurt your bike? No. And will it keep your bike secure? Yes. If covered vehicle parking is provided, covered bicycle parking must be provided. And then the bottom right has the example of what the dimensions actually are for a bicycle parking space. So this is for a single space, and you can imagine here that this is basically a wall where there's not enough room to put another bike on this side. If there was another bike on this side, it would be an additional 28 inches instead of 12. 12 means that you can still walk around it, get to your bike, but 28 is for where there's bikes on either side. And then it shows, you know, where should the rack be positioned within that bicycle parking space. So then the incentives, they're 5% of a reduction each in the amount of required vehicle parking. And when you reduce the amount of required vehicle parking, it doesn't have an impact on how many required bicycle parking spaces you have. So the number of required bicycle parking spaces stay as the same. It's just the amount of vehicle parking on site changes. So that's if you do one bicycle parking space for every 5 vehicle parking spaces. If you provide covered bicycle parking where it's not required because you have covered vehicle parking, if you provide bicycle parking indoors, so typically this would probably be in like an apartment building, but it could also be in an office building. And then if you provide bicycle lockers or bicycle cages instead of bicycle racks, there was a lot of discussion about those are much more desired in places like transportation terminals where somebody's going to be leaving their bike all day and taking the ferry or something like that. So then for electric vehicles, that's in section 10. Again, this is a new section added to the parking code and applies to all new construction or redevelopment where the project cost is greater than or equal to 50% of the assessed building value. It's the same standard as what the building code is using. One electric vehicle charging space per 10 vehicle parking spaces, same as what the building code requires, installed as required by the building code requirements. So what I didn't really get into that's being adopted in Title 1404 is a whole bunch of really technical specifications about what kind of electricity service is required. All of those things, we're saying you need to go read the building code to figure all of that out. It's not gonna be in the zoning code. Level 2 chargers are required. Charging spaces are solely for actually charging vehicles. Signage to that effect is going to be required to be posted. So once a vehicle is charged, you need to go and move it so that somebody else can use it. Other charging spaces need to be illuminated. Charging station operator information should be posted on site so that folks can contact the operator if there's some kind of error or malfunction or, you know, issue that they need help with. Because what we anticipate is that often the charging station will not be owned or operated by the business that's on site. It'll be some charging network or company. And then we also will provide for shared charging infrastructure under our shared parking rules. There's already established a method to have shared parking lots. Shared charging infrastructure is allowed under that same requirement. So the incentives for electric vehicle charging, again, 5% reduction. If you install level 3 chargers, if you do one electric vehicle charging space for every 5 vehicle spaces, and again, if you think back to what the building code is requiring, where they have an additional 10% that needs to be EV ready, you're effectively installing those EV ready stations. And then if you install a charging space that could be used by a truck that's towing a trailer, so effectively a pull-through parking space that's double width, if you're required to have over 250 parking spaces and you choose to put in one of those pull-through charging spaces, that would be a 5% reduction. So then the rest of the sections are basically the wrap up. So it would be effective immediately. Severability, just the same as severability for any other code amendment, and Scrivener's errors, which provide for if something gets missed in the ordinance or in amendments to the ordinance, we can get it fixed without having to go back all the way through the public process. So we've been through this timeline, it's been made available, the documents were available before the public comment period even opened, and now we're here. So I'm presenting a draft proposal to you. You are holding a public hearing in 2 weeks. And then after that, we'll go through the rest of your process with the findings of fact, deliberations, all that good stuff. And then we'll move to the board consideration. Currently, that's planned for in January. It may end up being pushed back a little. We'll see what their schedule looks like come December, because I can't actually get stuff on their schedule without having the documents. I won't have documents until we're done with your process. So that is where we're at.
Okay, thank you for that. Do we have any? Do we have any questions from the commission about this, Mr. Shattuck?
I just want to make sure I understand how this would apply in different circumstances, particularly with regard to the bikes. So let's say we have a Costco and a UGA, and I've got 400 parking spaces. So what the ordinance would require would be 40 bicycle locations within 100 feet of the front entrance of the Costco door. Do I have that right?
That is currently the way it's drafted, yes.
Okay. And so even though we look at that business model and we're saying you don't see a whole lot of people taking their new refrigerator or big take a toilet paper back on their bike, that's it's just a uniform, same with a Home Depot or a Lowe's. We're going to have these huge parking lots, huge areas for bicycles in an area that business model probably says you ain't going to have that many bicycles there. But that's for, can maybe just address the thought process of that.
Yeah, so certainly there's 2 points, and actually in some ways almost three. The first one is employees can certainly bicycle, and those kind of big box stores certainly have a lot of employees. The second is that, and I didn't actually include it in the slides and I should have, we set a cap of there would be a maximum of 50 bicycle parking spaces required on any project. That number was just kind of what we came to during the comment process as we kind of went to the different meetings and hashed out what version 3 of the ordinance looked like. Certainly, I'm willing to consider other numbers on that. But like I said, employees are certainly something to keep in mind when you're thinking about bicycle parking. And thirdly, it's not specifically related to this project, but it's absolutely related to parking. And you have to remember that all of these, both the bicycle parking and the electric vehicle charging, are based on the amount of required vehicle parking on a site for a project. With the comprehensive plan update, we are very specifically going to be looking at our parking standards. So those will probably change as a reduction. And so that would functionally mean these standards will be less as well. The percentages will still be the same, but when the required number of vehicle parking spaces is lower, obviously your total is going to be lower as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Aaron?
Is now the right time in the sequence to ask any kind of clarifying questions? And I'm actually looking at the staff report for my questions versus the ordinance in its entirety. Is that okay, or should I wait till another?
Nope, that's fine. Tonight's the night.
Okay.
Let me get it open so that I can look at what you're looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, it's just where I took notes, but I'll reference the sections of the code that apply. So the intent right now with 10% of stalls becoming EV, and you said this will go into effect when, July 1 of next year?
So that's when it's required to go into effect by the state building code and the WAC. Our plan is for this code that we're adopting to go into effect as soon as the board's process is finished. Their okay. direction from the get-go has been they don't want to miss any opportunities to have these things being built with projects.
Okay, so and so immediate effective would include the 10% EV
yes.
on-site, 10% EV ready, and 10% EV capable?
Yes, because we're adopting the building code portion as well.
Okay, so has that been studied with regard to, I mean, if new cars starting in 2030 will be required to be made as such, I don't know, but I could guess the average lifespan of a vehicle at 12 to 15 years. So we're going to be starting something in 2023 that may not come to fruition until 2045?
So
as the onus on the developer?
So, I mean, to some extent, yes. One thing that I think is also mentioned in the staff report is there's what's called an adoption curve. And for electric vehicles, what it's shown to be across the world has been once a given country passes a 5% adoption rate, so 5% of new vehicles sold are electric vehicles in Germany or South Korea or wherever, then the rate goes like exponentially up. The adoption rate, it's like a hockey stick curve the same way.
Yeah, no, I understand what yep. innovators and early adoption and mainstream and all that looks like on a curve.
Yep. And so we're at 5% in the US. And so, and I will say the staff report number that's in there for current number of electric vehicle owners or registered in the county was 3,600, I think, just under.
Right, so, which is like 1.3% of our population.
Sure. In the 2 months, 1 month since I wrote that, it's gone up by almost 200 vehicles. So.
Okay. Definitions, just in your bullet point presentation, you referred to bikes. What's the definition of covered?
It's not currently defined, I don't believe, but we can certainly add a definition. The way that I would understand it is protected from rain, essentially. So if there's a carport on site, I would say something like a carport should also be provided over the bicycles.
Just, yeah, if you're going to enforce it, you're going to want to define it. And then the term illuminated, you know, any place that is a public walkway or a public parking facility already has a foot candle on the ground requirement for general public safety. And yeah. yet both in EV and in bike, you use the term illuminated. And so again, if you are going to enforce something other than standard parking foot candles on the ground and walkways, you're going to want to define that separately if it is in addition.
It's not meant to be in addition. It's meant to be if for some reason this is in some place that would not normally have required illumination, then the illumination.
Well, based on the other parameters you've set with regard to their location, I don't know how it would end up in the dark, but I guess if that, yeah, I think if you understand that that is under the concept of standard public lighting.
If I could interject here, please. On that deal, I think your illumination, if you're going to define something, I think it should be along the lines of sufficient illumination so that a person hooking up their charging can do it, you know, so they can see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That may not, you know, your standard illumination may not be enough to line up stuff.
Yeah, I guess the point would be to study that, because task lighting for an 80-year-old to plug in a car at night, assuming maybe they didn't leave their headlights on, well, that's a different number of foot candles at the point that you're trying to perform the task.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, or same with locking a bike. Maybe a half a foot candle that works fine in a drive aisle is not enough for me to figure out how to get my key in my lock. Right. So it's worth looking at, is all I'm saying.
Right.
Yep.
Good points.
Okay. Any more? Or you want to give
Ms. Smith, let someone else take the floor.
Ms. Smith.
Thank you. So since we're in a work study session, I just wanted to ask a learning curve kind of question. So this is a county ordinance, correct?
Correct.
So are our city jurisdictions, tribal jurisdictions, are they creating similar ordinances, and are we lining and aligning together on our expectations?
So the tribes are kind of an entity of their own. I don't even know if they are required to abide by the IBC or the IRC. David Kinley is here. He can probably answer that. I do know that Bainbridge Island is already adopting something similar for their own purposes. As far as electric vehicle charging, I don't think that they were looking at the bicycle parking. And I would expect that most of the other jurisdictions will probably just adopt the building code requirements, potentially with some changes that they feel are locally appropriate. You can always be more restrictive. You can't be less.
So you're pretty confident that these expectations in this ordinance will align with the city jurisdiction ordinances for similar?
Generally speaking, yeah. Like I said, there are some exceptions that are in the current WAC that we chose not to include.
So that's an assumption that we're making. Is there a part of the process where we're checking in with our city partners?
No.
Okay.
Bainbridge, I think she initially reached out to me because we ended up in the Kitsap-Sun after sending out a public notice at one point. And so that's what prompted her to reach out to me. And she actually wasn't aware of the change in the WAC. So got her set on the right direction as far as that went.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Beam.
Make sure I'm not muted here. I have some basically admin questions to make this process a little easier. I noticed that you didn't mention in any of the materials up until this presentation, the RCW or the WAC. Those would have been helpful for us when we were studying the program to find out, you know, what's the real requirement. And
those are definitely referenced in the staff report, and I'm pretty sure they were also referenced the last time.
I couldn't find it because I spent a lot of time looking for it. And the RCW is RCW 1927540. The SEPA checklist wasn't provided in our package. Going to the website and reviewing the SEPA checklist, it is very superficial in my opinion. And it's missing the non-project section D entirely, which is required if you're doing a non-project one, which you've told me 723 times in the SEPA that you're doing a non-project. The big thing on this is that this is a utilities thing. The SEPA is supposed to be addressing what is the impact on the environment and on the community. And they said for utilities, we're going to require electricity. That's not a very good answer. Would it be possible to get a copy of these slides? And I haven't seen anywhere where the comments that the public has made is available. I didn't see it on the website, and you didn't give it us in this package.
You will have the public comments that have come in by the end of the public comment period for the night of your public hearing. The public comment period ends October 17th, so the night before your public hearing. And the non-project actions definitely are in the SEPA checklist that's on the website. They start on page 15.
I didn't see section D at all. I'm sorry, I looked. The other question is, you mentioned the Kitsap County Climate Change Resiliency Study. Where would I find that?
I would have to look on the website and send it to you. I'm not sure exactly where it is.
Okay, but most of these are just admin things, trying to make this thing a little bit easier to review and to digest. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry, one more, since we're kind of in clarification mode. In the staff report on page 3 of 9, bullet number 2 under substantive findings, it references the GMA and RCW 3670A.130, section 5 says, development regulations be reviewed and, if needed, revised at least every 10 years. And then goes on to say that our last review that was quantified was in 2016. So can you explain why we're back on this at year 6 instead of year 8 or year 10, as far as it being appearing accelerated?
Right. So our comp plan is due in 2024. Mm-hmm. So that would make it the previous 8-year requirement. After this 8 years is done, that's when it goes to the new 10-year interval. We're starting now because, frankly, it's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, no, I've been through it once before. I'm not questioning that. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do we have any other comments here? Okay, I had one other question about this. We're talking about, you know, changing over parking spots to electric charging. How is that incorporated with the handicap parking?
Yeah, it's, they're still required to be accessible charging spaces, and it doesn't decrease the amount of regular accessible parking spaces. So you'll have to have an accessible charging space, other charging spaces, and accessible parking spaces and regular parking spaces. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so there won't be a charging station in the handicap area.
There will be a ADA accessible charger, yes.
Okay.
But it won't replace an existing ADA spot. Okay. That's not the intention.
And then I had one other question about this. You stated that 100 feet from the main entrance for bicycle parking.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't that just be a building entrance?
So the reason that the main entrance was chosen was there were a lot of responses on the community survey about security issues with bicycles. And we felt that a main entrance meant that there would be increased foot traffic, so you can keep an eye on stuff that way, as well as any cameras that might be watching the main entrance as well would potentially see it.
I find, you know, we do have a lot of buildings that have multiple entrances, and then to say main entrance, now we're wanting the business to define what is the main entrance here. And that, I guess if you're worried about, if people are worried about security, then it should be a secure location next to an entrance somehow. I don't, you know, just arbitrarily saying main entrance doesn't convey that it is a secure or watched parking spot for bikes.
Okay.
Okay. Any other comments?
Sorry, I have one more.
Sure.
On page 4 of 9 of the staff report, item number 3, other alternatives considered. It made me uncomfortable to read, no official alternatives are considered. Just from a, are we really responding to what the taxpayers and the voters need? That feels oddly seclusionary.
For this, it's functionally a yes or no vote. So that's why there are no other alternatives. And particularly with the electric vehicle portion, that is largely what it is going to be. So.
Due to the fact of state
right.
regulations. Okay. All right. Mr. Beam.
I found the section B. It was below the signature line. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. One last crack at this. Anybody? No? Okay. Well, thank you for your presentation. We'll look forward to the public hearing at the next meeting.
Yep.
Okay. That brings us to our second general public comment period. Do we have anybody wishing to speak on that?
That's not happening.
No. Okay. Seeing no one, I will close that comment period. And now we go to item H for the good of the order or commissioner comments. Do I have any for the good of the order or comments?
I do have a thought. I'm sorry, I'll wait to be called on.
No, that's fine, Commissioner okay. Smith. Go ahead.
Thank you. So I am aware that we've had a number of meetings that have been canceled this year, as well as there's been some turnover regarding the staff support to the Planning Commission. And I wanted to be sensitive to the requests, the information, as well as be informed as a Planning Commission to the staffing capacity when there are projects presented to us, ensuring that our feedback is sound and in good judgment, and that we're also aware of what might be possible. And when we make requests, how that reprioritizes staff time that supports the work that we review. So I'm curious with my other planning commissioners if others share this as a concern as far as being informed of what might be available. If it is truly an issue, I would appreciate having with the projects that are presented at our planning commission, additional information about staff capacity regarding that project so that we can stay informed and again sensitive to the requests that we make to the staff on the project work that we are reviewing.
Okay. This point, I see that Director Mr. Remick is online. If he would you feel appropriate to discuss this at this time?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
I know in the past there's been some questions at times about what current staffing is in the department. I'd be happy to run through that right now because there has been that change, and I know people have been listening to it and give you some of the stats. It has been a big change this last 24 months. We've had a 75% turnover in staffing in the last 24 months. We're still, and let's talk about permitting, I guess, really quick. So for permitting, when we look at it, we're about $60 million over in valuation of any permitting year we've had to date since we started tracking in 2002. We're turning out about 20% more permits than we've done in the last 2 years. And we continue to move forward and really kind of crank those out. The reality is there's a lot of work that is coming down and in the hopper. We currently, between ready to issue, issued, in a return status, under review, have just under 5,000 permits in our purview right now that we're actively pursuing. That's between Title 21, Title 21 being the horizontal and infrastructure land use permits, as well as shoreline and environmental, and then Title 14, any of our vertical construction permits that we have underway. Any of our vertical construction permits have about a 2-year liability period with which we look at. So we look at staffing to support those for the upcoming 2 years from the date of issuance. And really, last time I looked at it, there's about 300 permits sitting in the queue that are ready for issuance at any point. It comes down to the owner of said permit just deciding they wish to issue the permit and move forward with their work. So we are right size when we look at the FTE and the work source for where we're at. The one of the delays we've been having recently was beyond our control. We have 8 permit technicians that we have that work doing intake. Out of those, we were running for about 2.5-3 months with only 2. We had people that were out on long-term illness. We had some vacancies that you're working at. We've taken actions to go ahead and fill those. So we have 2 new permit technicians that are now on board. There is a learning process associated with being a permit technician and learning the process as we go forward. But they've hit the ground running and they're moving very quickly. We started out, we also changed our customer service hours. If you were to see it or you'd seen the announcement recently, we are not open for face-to-face service on Monday or Fridays. That was based on 2 years on, you know, I shouldn't say 2 years. We opened in July of 2021, but tracking from July of 2021 till August, through August of this last year, we have gone ahead and provided about 85 more hours every month than was actually utilized by any in-person services. So in reflection of that and the need to go ahead and get intake times down because they started to build as we were short on our permit tech staff, we went ahead and we are now closed on Monday and Friday with the blessing of the commissioners so that we could catch up and stay ahead and stay. Our goal really is to have a 1 to 2 day turnaround on permit intake. We had gotten out to 30 days. There are other jurisdictions that are beyond that, but that was by far way more than we wanted to be for any sort of intake for any permits coming in. So we started that on September 6th. We also went ahead and got our first fully remote permit technician that was brought on board to go ahead and process permits. So that also started in the beginning of September. We had 340 or 50 permits that were in the queue waiting to go into review when we started that on September 6th. As of last Friday, we were at 142 or 146, I don't recall. It's more than half the number has been cut down to get into review. We do prioritize based on single family residents, as those have the biggest adjustable factor when it comes to APR and housing affordability, as well as new housing is one of our goals. So we're moving in the right direction, not as fast as anybody would like to see, but we have taken action to go ahead and start to pull down intake and processing times. We still support any of the projects that are moving before us. You'll kind of know if there is a delay or there's a staffing issue because you'll see that we're not actually pulling it forward. That will be one of the ways that you'll know. If we don't, just like when we went ahead and put the use table and it had to go on pause while we had some statutory requirements to do with the buildable lands report that needed to be done. We'll give you plenty of notice and let you know that that's going on hold for a minute while we go ahead and take other statutorily required projects ahead of that. So I think that was pretty much it. Did anybody have any questions? Sorry.
Okay. Director Remack, real quick. Sorry. First, thanks for being here. I know you already have long days. You said 1 to 2 days. Is that from submittal, upload to acceptance and in the queue? Or I'd be surprised if you meant first review. That feels crazy fast.
No. I meant 1 to 2 days to have it submitted, accepted, and in the queue for review. And then our goal when it comes to building review for Title 14 permits is 30 days. And we're actively working right now. We've caught up, as you know, we've been behind when it came to stormwater and the number of vacancies that we had in stormwater. As we filled those vacancies, we've actually gotten to where we're only about a week behind in our review queue when it comes to stormwater. So we've started doing resource leveling in the DSE to go ahead and get more reviewers put onto Title 21 so that we can go ahead and start bringing down those times when it comes to our Title 21 permits.
Thank you, sir. And can I ask, sorry, Stacy, were you asking that it become a report at every time we met? Because that feels to me like one more thing that Jeff does on top of a 14-hour day. I'm not sure that's fair.
Right. Yeah. So I just wanted to thank you so much, Director Remack, for being here and giving us that information. I didn't anticipate so much information, and I really appreciate the transparency. I want, as a planning commissioner, to support the work of your department And so I think it would be helpful as a planning commission if we know if there are projects and delays or staff capacity issues that we need to be sensitive to when a topic is presented, not as a standing agenda item, but when projects are presented, and just to help keep us informed and sensitive to that workload capacity.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That is something we could definitely do when it comes to the specific projects as to who exactly is working on it and what else they might be tackling at the time. So you have a good situational awareness.
And I should add in here that the agenda meetings before we have our meetings, we do discuss what is presentable, what is going to be delayed, and that. So there is some behind the scenes that is going on to kind of make sure that we're being presented information on a timely basis. And if things do get delayed, it, you know, it does shift them out of the agenda. And that something that if you become the chair at one time, you'll be privy to. So
that was shameless. That was shameless plug.
I was thinking
I'm following my predecessor. Start early and hammer away at it. And that, is there any other items for the good of the order or comments at this time?
I just want to wish Amy well. Yes. And thank you so much for all the years you put in on the commission, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. I wanted to basically say the same. Thank you all for being a great team for the past few years. I haven't counted how many years, but it was not as many as I expected, but I'm glad to have had the opportunity. I think we do important work. So
yeah.
So thank you.
And the whole commission really appreciates all your efforts, Amy, and wish you the best luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Do I have a motion? No more comments. Do I have a motion for adjournment?
Move to adjourn.
And second?
Second.
All right. All those ready to go? Okay. We are adjourned until next meeting in 2 weeks. Good night.
Have a great night.
Good night. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.